Welcome to the Curious Competitor Podcast. I am your host, Connor Carrick, a professional hockey player and podcaster by trade, a curious learner by choice. Together, we will investigate career design. How successful can I become in sport? And with what quality of life alongside this goal can I experience? The four areas of focus on this podcast are physical expression, mental athleticism, spiritual growth, and experiential wisdom. Thank you for joining me. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Curious Competitor Podcast. Our guest today, a former teammate of mine. Hopefully, he doesn't have too many embarrassing rookie stories about me. Aaron Volpatti. We played together 2013-2014, which seems like, you know, multiple decades ago, not just one. But he's an NHL veteran from 2010 to 2015, honed his craft at Brown University prior to that. He's an author to be, a book coming out in 2022. Now he's a high-performance coach, focusing a lot on visualization. He's launched a 12-week course working with a lot of the youths, or the sport, rather's youth, and some of the next stars coming up. Aaron, like, one of the things I really appreciate about your story, and, you know, I know how you played. Like, you played a tough, mean, hard game. You had to earn people, you know, at home don't understand, like, just how sharp the depth of the NHL has to be to earn every single shift, every single night, and you're being evaluated so closely. Yep. They cannot wait to find someone cheaper, younger, you know, more available to take your spot. But, you know, I think that, you know, a lot of your career was built off the belief that confidence was a muscle, and adversity has played this, you know, really strong thread in your life, going back to, you know, when you're a kid. And, you know, I was a little different, right? I was a little bit of a more highly touted prospect. I was supposed to be, you know, in draft conversations. And you know, you were someone where all of a sudden you're playing at Brown University and you picked your head up and go, you know, I've come this far. Like, why can't I play in the NHL? So kind of walk us back through, you know, some of the injuries that you had as a young player and how that started to shift your mindset, and eventually we'll plant the seed for what you're doing now.
Yeah, man, sounds good. Well, first of all, it's good to see you. It's been, like you said, it's been a hot minute, just a casual, whatever, 8 years or whatever it is. But it's been a wild ride. Like, where do you want to start? We'll start in junior, maybe, with this junior. Sort of the main, this is kind of where my book sort of starts and where really like my life really kind of started, you know? But yeah, so I was born in a little town called Revelstoke, British Columbia, a little ski town. And yeah, like, to your point, I was never that good. Like, you know, I was just a Canadian kid. We all played hockey. Had no real adversity. Like, my family didn't have a lot. We just, you know, we grew up in a little trailer. Things were good. You know, we had fun. That was it. Like, no adversity. And my goal, you know, was always just at the time to play for the Vernon Vipers, the junior A team. Yeah. You know, we used to go watch them play, and I was like, I was a pretty good minor hockey player. But, you know, I got cut from all the AAA teams and summer league teams. Like, I was never like going to get drafted in the Bantam draft, you know, things like that. So like, man, if I can just, you know, sneak into junior A, like, I'll do what it takes. And, you know, and then maybe I can get a scholarship. Like, that was my NHL. And so sort of fast forward, I played junior B in my hometown, graduated there, and then, yeah, like, you know, fought my way into junior A, basically. And, you know, I tell people, I'm like, I had one goal my first year of junior. Like, I was a fighter. I mean, I was a hitter and a skater first, as you know, like, that was my game. And then with that comes fighting, just because, like, you know, I had a knack for hitting at a really young age. Yeah. Just, I don't know if the angles and a bit of that predator, like, I'm going to kill you kind of. And I was small too, so I had to have that.
Yeah.
So that was just always my game. And, you know, I got noticed and made it to junior A. And anyways, so when things really happened, what I mean with the adversity, after my second year, a junior, you know, we were out camping after the season ended, and, you know, not making the smartest decisions. And I was messing around with gas and fire, and I ended up spilling about a liter and a half of gas. Like, I had my sweater on, and, you know, I had these bottles in my pocket, and, you know, again, not a smart thing. and I was walking around and they ended up braking. So I had all this gas on me, and maybe 5-10 minutes go by. And like, I'm not totally oblivious. Like, obviously I look back now and you're like, obviously, what is this guy thinking? So I thought I kept a pretty safe distance from the fire, and like, I stunk like gas. So I'm like, need to throw this sweater in the fire. So I, you know, keep what I thought is a safe distance. But what I later learned is that like those fumes, they settle, and you know, it's highly flammable stuff. So I was like basically a walking bomb. And anyways, get too close, obviously. And you know, I light up, I basically exploded, and I was this wrecking ball of fire. And you know, people like ask me, how long were you on fire for? And I'm like, too long, man. I don't know. And my problem was I was so fast, and it's this natural, like the fight or flight, like you can't fight that. So I don't know why, like obviously I was in a panic state.
Yeah.
And it was a real out of body experience. It was so weird because I was panicking, but I wasn't in any pain, and that's just the shock. Right.
Yeah.
And I just remember thinking, I'm like, why is this not like hurting? Like, I know I need to get this out, but I'm not in any pain. That came later, but sort of fast forward, I got a bunch of the guys finally tackled me, and you know, I just remember sitting there, I'm naked, my clothes are all like, they're burnt, no, there's nothing left, and I'm just sitting there naked, and I just remember looking at my body, and I'm like, oh, I've really like, I've messed up here, like this does not look good. And anyways, long story short, we weren't even in service. So like, we're in the middle of nowhere. There's no service. There's no grass or water to help me with. That's partly why a lot of this was so bad, is like, I couldn't put it out.
Wow.
So I get airlifted to Vancouver finally, when we get into town, and you know, the shock had worn off, and I was like blacking out from this pain. It was like nothing, you know, you'd ever imagine. And so I get airlifted to Vancouver. And I wake up the next day, and I couldn't see anything. Like, I was a full mummy. So like head to toe, like nothing. So I ended up 40% second and third degree burns. I mean, my whole body was burnt, but that was the 40% second and third degree. So I needed skin grafts, and you know, I could tell you some really horrible stories of like the healing procedure they do in the burn unit, but man, it's pretty nasty stuff. A lot of pain every day. And anyway, so really like so that's where it starts. I wake up in the hospital the next day, and you know, my parents are just, they're thankful I'm alive, right? Like, they got a call at 1 a.m. Hey, your son's been in an accident. He's being airlifted to Vancouver. And like, they think the worst, right?
Right.
So it was pretty emotional the next day. And I just like, I woke up in Vancouver, and I'm like, what? I didn't even know I was there. And I'm just like, it all started coming back. I'm like, oh yeah, okay, I'm in one here. And so those first couple of weeks go by, or I should go back. The first, at about day three, when I saw the doctors, they didn't really know to the extent of the damage, like that first day or two, because you know, those burns, they go deep, and it takes some time to let them sit. And like, you kind of keep burning, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
When they're that deep.
Smolders almost, I imagine.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyways, I get it. 3 days go by. I'm all hopped up on morphine and, you know, pretty much just sleeping for the first 3 days. You know, I mean, my life wasn't in danger, but I was like very closely monitored with like infection and smoke inhalation and shock. Your body can go into a lot of shock with that amount of trauma. And I remember when the doctor came in, I asked him, I'm like, oh, well, like, what about hockey? My season's starting in 4 months. I got one more year to try and get a scholarship here. It's my last kick at the can. And I just like remember him looking at me like, this poor kid thinks he's playing hockey again. Like, it wasn't an option, you know? He just kind of said, he's like, I can't tell you that, like, but basically in a nice way, he said, you ain't been playing hockey for a while here. You're going to be in here for a while.
Yeah.
And, you know, like maybe we'll revisit that in a couple years kind of thing. And so that was kind of it for me. My career was over as far as I as far as I knew it. So I accepted that, and I was, you know, it was a mix of emotions. I was really bummed out and depressed that, you know, my hockey career is done, and I really wanted one more kick at the can here. On the other hand, I was like, you know, grateful that I'm not gonna, like, you know, have a deformed face, or the scarring is gonna, like, you know, affect my daily life maybe. So again, it was like a mix of these emotions. And so those first 2 weeks go by, and I get a call from my coach in junior, Mike Vandekamp, who was coaching the Vipers, and he said, "Hey, hey, how you doing?" Like, I had talked to him before that, but, and I said, "Well, yeah, not great, but hanging in there." Yeah. And he's like, "I got a call from Brown University from one of the assistant coaches. They're looking for, you know, this type of player." I think his exact words were, "We need a guy to put the fear of God in the Ivy League defenseman." And our coaches are, he said, "You know, I got the perfect guy for you. There's just one problem. Obviously, he's in the hospital." And so he said, "Just call him and, you know, just give him a call." So I called him, and they kind of left it open-ended, you know, like, "Hey, really sorry to hear about, you know, what happened. We just want to, you know, wish you the best in recovery. And, you know, we'd love to maybe see you play one day down the road." And I'm thinking, like, well, I can't do, like, my career's done. I can't play hockey in 4 months. And it was kind of just left like that. I said, "Thank you for reaching out, blah, blah, blah." So I remember I went to bed that night, you know, and I was bedridden, so I couldn't move. And so then my parents, like, got the phone up to my ear, right? And a couple hours go by, and I just started thinking, and I'm like, why can't I play hockey? Because, like, it's going to be too painful. There's like a big long list. It's going to be too painful. Like, the skin grafts are going to be way too stiff. The big one was the risk of infection will be really high. Yeah. You can't sweat properly, so your body, like, could, you know, basically go into like a shutdown mode. Like, there's just this big list, and I'm just like, that's not a good enough list for me. Like, I don't accept that. And I just, like, flipped that mindset. And I had that natural grit in me, like, just with how I was raised and all that. But this really was like, I just flipped the switch. And so where the visualization part comes in is that was all my mind was all I had. I couldn't do anything. I just sat there all day in pain. So I started just, you know, using that pain and, you know, that's my body healing. And I started visualizing, I'm like, okay, this is the only thing I have here. And I made a choice that I'm going to come back and play hockey. I'm going to die before they tell me I can't go play hockey. That was my mentality. And so every day I would visualize walking out of that hospital. I'd visualize playing, you know, that next year, putting on my gear, and, like, I'd visualize my body and my skin and my cells, even at, like, a cellular level, like, just healing and, like, feeling good and all these things, and physically signing, like, my commitment letter to Brown, because I'm like, I'm getting a scholarship. Like, that's what I'm going to do. And it worked. Like, that's the craziest thing for me was, at the time, I'm like, this worked. Like, and it was just like, whoa, like, this is like a whole new world I didn't even know existed. Just that grit and that mindset and that what we all have available to us. But, and so and that's why I preach the adversity thing, is because, man, I owe everything to that experience, because if I didn't go through that, there's absolutely no way I would have, like, went to Brown, made it to the NHL. So that's where it all started for me. So and trust me, it took me down a rough path that summer. Like, my body was not ready to be playing hockey. Like, I got released from the hospital in 6 weeks, which is probably half of what I was supposed to be in there for. And then I couldn't walk for another month or 6 weeks after that, because all my grafts on my legs, like, if I would stand up, the blood would rush through to my legs and start bleeding. So I had to keep my legs elevated for another month or 6 weeks. So I'm just, you know, I'm walking around on my arms and doing my stretching rehab. And then by that time, there's another month left before the season. And again, it's like overcoming those doubts every day. It's like, how the hell are you going to play hockey in a month? Like, you can't even walk yet. And yeah, like I have those thoughts, obviously, but it's like, no, like I'm going here. So just stay the course. And anyways, what I mean by, you know, the rough summer was, so I got kidney stones the day I got out of the hospital, just from being so dehydrated, they said. And then, I think it was 10 days before camp or 8 days before camp, I wake up with a pain in my lower stomach, and I'm like, hey, what could this be now? Like, this summer's been like enough of that. And I go to the doctor and I got appendicitis, and they're like, this needs to come out now. Like, it's not good. And I'm like, what the f-? Like, and so they look at me and, but they don't know I'm burnt. Right. So I take off all my clothes and they're like, they see this big, ugly, fresh skin graft on my stomach. And they're like, whoa, like, what is this? And they're like, we got to cut through that. So they had to cut through my skin graft I just got to get my appendix out. And, you know, again, it was just like, it took me down this journey of like, you want to talk about adversity, like that really thrust me into it that year. And so fast forward a week, I'm suiting up for our home opener. And, you know, I start playing pretty well. Like, I'm in no shape to really be playing hockey. Like, it hurt a lot. And this is when you could get shot up with all the painkillers you wanted, right?
Right.
So I'm getting shot up just so I can play. And, but again, I'm chasing that scholarship. Like, I was in touch with the guys from Brown, and they're like, we're coming to see you play in a few weeks. So, you know, I'm like, I just got to make it till then. Like, I only played, I think, 20 games my last year. Like, I wasn't in good shape. I was still healing. Like, I had fresh burns basically and wasn't supposed to be playing. But again, I'm like, I don't accept these reasons. And, you know, I played, and anyway, so I'm kind of rambling on about it, but there's a lot more to it. And that's a lot of what my book goes into is that what that grind really looked like, and what I was able to do because of it. But I got my scholarship. They came to watch me play and they offered me a few days later, and then I shut it down for the year so I could heal. And, you know, I did it, and I accomplished my goal.
Well, cause I played with you and I saw some of the scars and was always curious, and I knew a little bit about the story, but not to that extent. Like, I just had a brother, you know, who went to university, was 20 years old in his last year, junior. Like, it's a very pressure filled situation. It's that you've got the whole back of your youth career bottled up into this one season, and you just want to give it the best kick you can to, you know, achieve that Division I. I grew up similar, right? There was no real talk in the Chicagoland area of playing in the National Hockey League. It was like, you know, you want to be able to play in the NCAA. You want to be able to play, you know, Division I scholarship. Yeah. So, you know, very similar. But what I'm hearing in your story, you know, obviously, hopefully not every one of our listeners goes through a burn so severe and then a surgery right through it as it's trying to heal.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't want that.
But, you know, I think it's special to acknowledge that, you know, some of those doubts, some of the performance anxiety, the sort of down emotions that come with trauma, like, there was room for them. But at some point, you know, whether it was stubborn will, whether it was grit, you know, there's a lot of, you know, high end names for it, but at some point you were going to reverse engineer and go, you know, my goal's just bigger than that. Like, I'm not willing to accept the ending of this story that someone else wants to put on, you know, my life. And, you know, I really admire you for being able to go through that. And I think there's two things, you know, that has definitely come up in my career, you know, and in yours as well. This relationship with high stress environments, it's a part of pro hockey. It's not going anywhere. And your relationship with pain. How was your ability to handle those two things? How did that project you, you know, first it got you into Brown, and eventually, you know, it must have carried you well through Brown because you played well enough to sign an NHL deal on the other side of it.
Yeah, I can go a lot of ways with that one. I think, you know, first of all, like with the stress part and the anxiety part, like that's not our enemy. Like everyone says, a little bit is good, right? And it's just how we don't manage it properly. And that's where, you know, visualization and, you know, different mindset tools can help you frame that differently and be like, like, you know, this is just my, this is my body getting me ready for what I've trained for. Like, this is good. Like, you know, as opposed to, oh man, like I'm nervous. Like I'm going to screw up for sure. Like, what if I do that? What if I do this? Like, I'm not going to get a scholarship. Or it's like, you just really start going spiraling. And that's what, you know, people deal with, you know, is that we all have that as a default where we want to focus on the negative. So you have to work on it. You have to do the repetition and, you know, and train that muscle. That's your brain to change those pathways, because we already have these pathways in our brain. So, you know, they're there. You got to, it's hard to change them. And that's the thing. I'm like, not saying this is not an easy practice. It's hard. But it's hard for a reason, because they're, like I said, they're wired in your brain. You, like, you don't get a choice necessarily at that moment. Your choice comes what you do, you know, with the repetition on the daily of what message and how you want to be thinking, right? And to your physical pain point, that really, like, I'm not advocating that people go seek out physical pain, but it really can, you know, provide motivation. And, you know, like, even like anger isn't necessarily always a bad thing if you can channel that. And like, for me, it was just about harnessing that pain. Like, and I'm talking like a lot of pain. Like, this was like nothing I, you know, had, will probably ever experience, hopefully, again. But just like, again, like harnessing that and just in reframing it as, you know, this is my body healing, and it's, and taking, it's taking it me to where I'm going. And so it's just, again, sort of channeling that. And that really starts, it really starts affecting you. Like, it, I'm like, okay, like this doesn't hurt as much, which was crazy. So that really opened my mind up. But the, like, the really cool part about the whole story for me was, like, again, when I got to Brown, like, I forgot all of that stuff. Like, and that was just, you know, naivety on my part, but I'm like a 21-year-old kid. And like, I'm like, man, look what I went through. Like, no one else can, that I know, that I'm, can really say that they went through this burn injury to like get through there. So I, you know, I was, I felt good about it. And I'm like, I'm just, I'm having fun. I'm enjoying being a student athlete, and I made it. Like, that was my mentality. And again, I didn't, you know, have the wherewithal at that time to be like, okay, what's next? You know, and that's what you, people got to think. It's like, okay, like, what's next? What's your, think big. And I, for me, that was big. And that's the crazy thing. Like, pro hockey wasn't even on my radar, like, not even close. Like, that was it for me, right? And so, yeah, it wasn't until my third year, after my junior year, one of the coaches, assistant coaches, after, you know, our exit interview, like my first 3 years, I played like the same role I always played, third, fourth line, can't fight in college, but, you know, I was still playing that role. And, you know, he pulls me aside. He's like, hey, you ever thought about playing like pro hockey? And I, and, you know, these coaches we had played in the American League and the East Coast League, for a few years kind of thing. And I'm like, I just laughed. I'm like, no, I haven't thought about playing pro. Like, why would I? I'm 24 years old. You know, I haven't thought about it. And, so I went home that night, again, like similar to that, the, you know, years prior, that conversation I had in the burn unit with this coach from Brown. And I just went home and I'm like, oh yeah, like, remember that? Like, so I went home and I'm like, if I can do that, like, this seems, this parallels in, you know, to that, to the burn journey I had. So I made my mind up. It was kind of like another epiphany I had. I'm like, yeah, like, why can't I? Again, it seems like less of a challenge than the first. So let's do it. And that was, I just flipped it again. So I went back to that visualization, which I, you know, I hadn't done, because again, I had kind of made it, but I didn't have, like I said, the wherewithal to be like, man, you're just getting started here. What else could you do? Like, I didn't think that way. So it just took me a few years, because I had to have, you know, a kick in the ass to be like, hey, let's kind of think here. And so I decided to live in Providence that year. And man, I lived at the rink that year. And I worked on this visualization to the point where like I had my movie like down pat, and I always get my clients to write or give their movie a soundtrack, right? Because music, I think, is really powerful. I mean, I know it is, and there's a lot of science behind it too. But like I had it so down that I was just like living this movie every day of my life from that point on. And I'm like, I just knew I was going to go to the NHL. Like I saw it and I put in the work necessary to live out that movie. And again, I used that adversity I had years prior with the burn accident as like a superpower, because I'm like, man, I can do anything if I can do that. And then it worked again. And that's what I tell people. I'm like, I can't stress enough like that I was never supposed to make it to the NHL. I wasn't that good. And, you know, people look at my stats and I mean, you're not going to see a lot of points in the NHL, but, or really any times in my career, except that one year. And that it's not by accident. It's because of this design that I, you know, I lived out that movie, and the visualization piece was so powerful for me. Just again, it like squashes any type of that anxiety you have and your confidence. So I got off to a hot start. And then I'm like, okay, this is working. And then it just snowballs. And then you want to do it more. So I was just like, man, I was obsessed. And I'm just like, I would put on my song and I would just listen to it. And it like, when you get the practice down, like I can't describe the amount of emotion that can come from it. And that's when you know you're doing it right, is like, yeah, you visualize, but really you want to create a feeling, right? And that's what's going to make that pathway in your brain. It's going to be, when you start feeling, that's when you know it's like, okay, this is a new pathway for me. And this is going to essentially be my default, right? So yeah, I had more points my senior year than I did my first 3 years combined. And I went from, again, no one knew who I was when I was 24 years old. So I went from no NHL team, I guarantee you didn't know who I was, or like they wouldn't know my name, to within a year being like, you know, probably a top five prospect in the NCAA.
Yeah, wow.
In 1 year, right? And it just, again, this whole practice for me proved true. And the rest is history, I guess you could say. You know, I signed in Vancouver right the next day after we got bounced from the tournament there. And I always tell people, it's funny, like my parents didn't believe me. I didn't tell anyone. They legit did not believe me. Yeah, because like again, I wasn't like no one, including myself, didn't think anything for 24 years of pro hockey, right? And like they knew I was having a good year, obviously. I mean, I was almost point a game and, you know, playing a lot. And I was still playing that role. And like I was hurting some kids because I was like 24, turning 25, 215, and you got 18-year-olds coming in like at 150. Like there was some bad collisions there. So I'm like, you put those two together and I started getting some interests. And my parents, they're like, I told them I was getting a little bit of interest from some minor league pro teams, and they're like, oh, that's really cool. Like maybe he'll go play pro in one of the lower leagues for a couple of years or something. That was what they thought. And so when I told them, I called them right after and I'm like, hey, I was talking about some pro teams, and like, yeah, yeah. And I was like, well, you know, by pro, I meant the NHL. Like I've been talking to a lot of NHL teams, and like, what? They're like, get out of here. And I remember, and then I'm like, no, I'm serious. I actually just signed with Vancouver for 2 years. And my dad was like, they didn't believe me. And they're like, okay, man, like joke's over. And I'm like, no, seriously, like look it up. And by that time it was like live or whatever. Right. Yeah, yeah. And they're like, what? So that's pretty cool. Yeah.
That's super cool. Yeah. I love that question. Like, why can't I? I've done harder, more difficult things in my life. You know, that's something, yeah, exactly. Even earlier in my career, I would look at similar players, like players I grew up with, you know, either having more success or they'd come back from injuries. Like, why, you know, can't I? That was, you know, I remember the first time I got injured earlier in my career. It was a shoulder separation my first year, and just being young and enthusiastic, you know, oh my God, will I ever get a spot in the lineup again? Will I ever get another look? You know, you're, you know, pretty dramatic about it. You know, but help me understand. So like when you do take in a new client, visualization, like, how small a detail are you advocating for? How do you help somebody who, you know, maybe hasn't exercised this part of their imagination? Because I really do feel it's a, it's a neural groove, right? So very similar to you I for a long time, just being athletes. Like, we wake up, we move physically, we practice, we train. I don't always want to. Like, I was, you know, we have an off day today as we record. Like, you know, we're in Lehigh Valley. I was, you know, my morning buzz of caffeine had kind of kicked off, and I'm like, you know, I'm a little sluggish from the day off yesterday. And all of a sudden, like, by the time I break the first sweat, I felt fantastic. And
yeah, well,
and
it's
so
always
it's
those hardest
inertia.
Days that you got to override that, right?
And so, like, I don't know how to convince others, for sure, and even myself at times, like, how important it is to spend time with the mental side of the game. Really be intentional about what do you want your career to look like? What do you want your relationship to your career to look like? So how do you help people be accountable to that, remain disciplined with that, remain creative with that, despite adversity, pain, you know, some of these non-negotiables in hockey, like they're coming your way at some point.
Yeah. Well, I mean, really it comes down to this movie, right? It's what do you want your movie to look like? And that's what we start with. It's like, we start it with the end, like, you know, Stephen Covey, it's like, start with the end in mind. That's where we start. And a lot of people, like, again, it all comes back to that adversity piece and like, use that adversity. It's like, oh, I did that. Like that's me, you know? And we all have these limiting beliefs of, you know, you want to talk about NHL, like, you know, we're hockey guys, right? So let's talk about hockey. So what do we know about making it to the NHL? What are you told? You can't do that. Like, that's like impossible. So you just, we know that as kids, and like, yeah, we all have dreams of doing that. But like, do you really truly believe? No, I bet you don't as a kid, right? I don't know. Like,
yeah,
that's what I think.
So it's interesting.
That's
like,
what I see. That's what I see is
for a lot of kids, and it comes from parents, preachers, teachers. Like, you know, you stand up in school and you go, I want to be a pro hockey player. And they're like, all right, no, what do you want to be?
Yeah, but that's like, that's what they say. What are your goals? And most people will say, yeah, I want to, or kids might say, I want to play pro hockey. But that's not a goal. And like, and in my course, I don't do goals because I don't believe in goals. Like, it's just a little wish. Like, yeah, I want to have whatever. Someone might say, I want to have millions and millions of dollars. Like, yeah, but everyone wants that. Or maybe not everyone, but, or I want this, or, you know, I like that. But it's just, it's a hope and it's a wish. And I think this is no different. A kid says, I want to play pro hockey. Well, yeah, but do you really truly believe you can do that? And if you do, you don't even have a sniff of what it really is going to take to get there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So with it, what I do with this course is like, so we identify where you want to go. And a lot of kids I work with will undermine like what's possible, right? And that's the thing that everyone's been, you know, ingrained in our heads at a young age. Not everyone, but, you know, a lot, the majority of people, you place these limiting beliefs on yourself, right? I'm not good. Like, look at Johnny over here, Susie over there, like, oh, they're way better than me. And like, yeah, it is, but it's okay. It's like, it's impossible to make it. So like, I'll just whatever, go through the motions and all these things, right? That we have this belief system where, you know, when I work with people, it's like, okay, let's start with the end. And I'm talking like, don't sell yourself short, shoot for the moon, because why land here?
Yeah, because otherwise you end up at Brown University not even thinking about pro hockey while your coach has a bigger dream for you than you do.
That's exactly it. And it's just like, you limit yourself to these possibilities in this whole world, right? And that's exactly what I went through, where it's like, man, I didn't even know this like gift I was given of like this superpower of what you can really do with the mind, right? And that's where it's like, let's shoot here. And like, I can't guarantee you're going to make there. That's on you. But, you know, I can guarantee you that you're going to be, have this in your mind, like not just for sports, but for life, right? And use that every day. So you might land here, But like that might still be higher than where you said originally that you wanted to land. Like I work with lots of college guys that say like, I'm like, what do you want to do? Like, again, we don't do goals. I'm like, where do you want to go? And they're like, a lot of them will say, well, I want to, you know, just, I want to play in the American League. I'm like, I'm like, if I can play in the NHL, like you're already were ahead of where I was. So like, let's shoot here, shoot for the NHL, because if you don't believe it, it's not going to happen. Right. So let's believe it and then flip that mindset and work your movie. And then, yeah, like if you end up in the American League to start, that's okay. Right. And then, yeah, maybe 10 years goes by and you had an American League career and you didn't make the NHL, but you can say that you believed and you gave yourself a chance, right? Because if you don't believe, there's no chance, in my mind.
Well, and it's a lot, you know, it's also about what kind of career experience do you want to have. And it's a lot more fun cultivating this practice of believing for yourself, of reaching for your highest form. I think that there's been times in my career where I've sold myself short and I'm sitting there on the other side of it like, I'm an idiot. Like, why did I remember I used to say this thing when I got drafted. I said, man, if I could just play one NHL game, I could be happy. I played an NHL game at 19. What do you think I felt like walking into game two? I'm like,
that's the thing. You always have to be like, okay, what's next? Right. And
you
have
do.
That
and
belief.
I think that, you know, the, you know, goals, a lot of times I had a coach actually, Peter Russo, I had on the podcast, said something similar. He's like, you know, you gotta be careful with goals. He's like, a lot of times they end up like, you know, dollhouses and you're standing in them, you know, with your shoulders scraping the roof, wondering what to do, next, right. You outgrew it. You know, so in terms of a cadence, like, how often do you try to get your clients to leverage this movie? How much work are they putting in? Are there writing assignments to support it? How do you guide them through the music selection?
Yeah. So, I mean, essentially there's 12 weeks. Each week it's a layer that you're adding on to your movie, right? So first, we write the movie. And again, this is a whole new, you know, practice. It's like meditation. It's not going to be like, boom, you got it. It takes a lot of practice, right? And that's the thing with visualization and mindset work, is it is the biggest bang for your buck, because it doesn't take hours and hours a day, right? We're talking like, you know, spend 5 to 10 minutes twice a day and just get yourself in this environment of, you know, take some deep breaths, and we do like breath work through it and get into the space of, okay, let's write your movie. And again, we add layers every week. So really the first part is let's write the movie. And then it's adding layers of like, you know, feeling different senses and, you know, like really going into the why and like, why do you want this? And like really like having that purpose, right? The soundtrack thing and picking the songs and like really breaking it down of like transition points in the songs. So it really gets at a granular level, you know, in that. And then again, specifically of like, okay, what should you be seeing and visualizing? Right. Because that's, you know, it's sports specific, but a lot of people, you know, struggle with that. Like, it's really hard to not get distracted, and that's totally normal. And like, that happens to me every day still. So again, just, you know, really working with them around that and just, you know, bringing it back to this movie. And again, it takes practice, but once you have the movie, it's something that it's like you go off with, and that's what you have every day. And when you have like such intense purpose and drive, then that's where, you know, that's where it really starts snowballing, because you're like, you start to believe, right? And that's the whole thing, is flipping that mindset and those connections in your brain, where it's like, you're trying to flip the belief. There's two parts of visualization. I should have prefaced it. It's like the whole belief part of, you know, really truly believing things, you know, you're really capable of anything. Because if you don't think that, again, you're hooped from the get-go, because deep down in your subconscious, you don't really think it's possible. So that's not going to serve you, right? And then there's the visualization aspect within sports of like, you know, visualizing those skills. So like you, for a defenseman, you know, it's like, it's like it's feeling your skates in the ice and hearing you when you walk that line and you're looking for a lane and you know you got to like get a jump and push off and make a move around that, you know, forward coming out to you, and hearing all the noises and hearing the crowd and whatever, and like, and you want to like start feeling. And that's the thing with visualization is like, you want to feel these things. So you want to feel like the puck and you want to feel it come off your stick. And then it's like, I see that, you know, that spot I'm going for and it goes in, and you'd like sit with those emotions. Right. And the thing with those, that the skill stuff is like, your brain doesn't know the difference. If you're like going to go play your game, I'm assuming you don't play tonight because it's 5.
Yeah. Yeah.
We don't like, play tonight. Yeah. If you go play your game tomorrow, like, your brain doesn't know the difference. If you've really practiced and you have your, you know, your visualization dialed in and you can make it as real as possible, your brain doesn't know if you're playing the game or not.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think we've all had,
you know,
those,
what I mean? It doesn't know the difference.
We've all had those like again, visualizations or like even dreams. Like I remember I was on a flight one time. I was going to a big hockey tournament as a kid and I was old enough to fly on my own. So I was flying on my own. I think it was a, for the U.S. team and all, like a tryout. And all of a sudden I, for whatever reason, was drifting off. I was in the twilight zone and I take a shot like, and I wake up and I smack the, like I, my body physically shot a hockey puck, like while I was half asleep and I smacked the guy next to me on the plane. I'm like,
pal,
I'm sorry, man. Like I was in the zone there. Like I don't exactly know what happened. And I think it's, I think it's, you know, admirable what you're, you know, mental health, for example, a lot of times has a connotation of like, just don't, all we're trying to do is avoid the downside. All we're trying to do is feel like less anxious. All we're trying to do is, is feel a little bit more confident, maybe as confident as everybody else, but like physical robustness, we can see it, right? That was your, that was always your goal in the offseason. You go home, you want your entire team, when you walk in the locker room for the first day, to go, what the fuck did that guy do this summer? Right. You want to go to the skate test and you want to blow people out of the water. So the coach, you can look at the coach in the eye and go, play me 30 minutes tomorrow night. You know, I won't touch my knees once. Like I'll be ready to rock. Right. You want to send that, that physical robustness message. You want to play with a certain level of bite. Then the first period, when you run, you know, the defenseman at Yale, like, hey, go for it. Volpatti's coming. Like you can touch the puck behind your own goal line if you want, but you're going to meet the third row, you know, if I happen to be on the ice. So you better be sure. And I want to make it known that it's entirely possible to have that mental robustness in the same way. This drive that is unparalleled. You know, we've seen it in pro sport at the highest level. I think, you know, Tom Brady might be the best example, right? Playing a position where it's really difficult for the average fan to decipher his talent level versus another quarterback. They all seem to be able to throw the hell out of a football. You know, most of them have had entire careers of success, but like, how does this guy every single time, you know, or Tiger Woods on Sunday, like there's a certain mental robustness that it's okay to strive for. You're not weak for maybe not being where you want to be. But there is a complacency in not creating goals for yourself on the mental side of the game, the same way you would physically.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is fear of failure, right? That's such a crippling anxiety for people, or fear of mistakes, right? Where those guys, I guarantee you, don't have that, right? And that's what separates, you know, elite from not elite, is they embrace those challenges, because the challenge is an opportunity. It's not this like, you know, thing that could hurt me if, you know, I don't succeed and then I got to live with that. It's like, no, this is an amazing opportunity for me. And that's where, again, if you can flip that anxiety and reframe it, right? Where it's like, this is my body like prepping itself and this is good. And man, what an opportunity this is. Like, I bet you that's what those guys are thinking. And they just go in and they have fun because they've already prepared, right? So it's fun. And it's like, you're telling me those guys aren't a little bit anxious and nervous before the game? For sure they are. But they know how to, you know, channel that and harness it the right way. And like, man, it's a huge problem now, with more so, I would say, with kids than maybe when we grew up, because I think of different, you know, whether it be social media, or like you said, everything's a highlight reel for these kids now. And and they beat themselves up. So that's where that anxiety comes from, is this fear of failure and mistakes. And it's the lack of confidence and the self-doubt. And that's really what, you know, it all starts with the mindset. So you can't fix that, like, without having that mindset right first. And just, again, like, if you have something like this movie, and that's why I say, like, once you have this movie and you start reframing those little adversities and those mistakes that, you know, cripple a lot of people, it's like, you just got to learn to let it go. Like, no, that wasn't me. And that's okay. I could have done this better. But then it's like, okay, you got to move on. What's next? And like, hey, look at this opportunity I still have. I'm still here. And that's the thing. It's like, you know, take a goalie, for example, and you let in a goal and, you know, you beat yourself up. And it's like, again, let's reframe it. Like, hey, you're a goalie. You're supposed to let in, you're going to let in goals. And that really, like, when you look back at it and you let that goal and it's like, oh, was it really that bad? Like, you know, let's look ahead and like look at the opportunity, right? And just reframe that. And again, say, hey, that wasn't me. Like, this was me. Like, go back to like things that worked well and like, again, reset it and live in the present at that time and let it go.
Yeah. It's like, right? you're looking ahead, knowing, like, this is something I've actually done in my own visualization where, you know, a lot of people will skip to the highlight reel. They want to score the big goal. I've purposely gone on and pretended, you know, I was at this point in my career, I was struggling when the coach, you know, got on me to get back to neutral, you know, where my hands didn't feel like they were, you know, made of stone, right? Where all of a sudden you're going to send your next pass to section 212. Like, you got to let your shoulders come away from your ears a little bit. Your hands got to rest, you know, closer to your belly button. You can't be carrying your stick out there and like, sees it's Connor. It's okay. Like, and I would spend time visualizing the coach yelling at me as vivid as I could, the meanest comments I could think of. And then that next shift going well, you know? Right. And so I think it's a very stoic practice. That's common where you visualize even the bottom line, like what is the absolute worst that can happen? And when you really drum it up and you can make a plan even for that, there's a sense of self-security. It's almost like it's worse not knowing, you know, you're worse not looking under the covers, you know, at everything you've been hiding and just sweeping under the rug. Like, you're better off really dance with that devil. Like, if you're afraid of something, you're afraid of the coach yelling at you, like, look at that. Why are you afraid? Well, what's the coach saying that's so scary? Like, what did you not know you made a bad play? Like, do you think the coach is out to get you? Can you talk to the coach head on? You know, there's things that you can do. And one thing I think that makes you particularly uniquely qualified for this practice is, like, I've done it, you've done it, low minute games. I still get asked, I'm in pro hockey. I'm one of the older guys, you know, in the American League on our team right now. We have younger players. I have junior players DM me and go, you know, my ice time's down. I can't find that flow state that was usually available to me with, you know, the consistent, you know, heart rate getting up there, the consistent ice time. How do you stay in flow? How do you manage to stay in a game where, you know, it is challenging when you're not playing a lot of ice time? You've been there.
Yeah, man, that was probably the biggest struggle for me in pro was that exact battle that you just said. You know, again, it's okay. I have my first shift, and if I make a mistake, I might not play the rest of the period or the rest of the game here. It's a tight leash, right?
Yeah.
So that was like, and again, that's what I tell people is like, you can have this practice dialed in and things are still going to, you know, make you nervous and all these things. You're going to have some anxiety. And for me, that was even a struggle when I had my mindset dialed in. So like, these things never go away. So again, I would just, you know, again, reset it and think, you know, prep beforehand, like you said, of, okay, here's what could go wrong, and like deal with that in the moment and say, okay, well, now what? Like, now what am I going to do? Like, it happened. Like you said, what are some tools of, maybe you just, you know, you sit on the bench and you have a few deep breaths and, you know, you might play, you might not play. But again, the more you get down, for me, it was just always about, I can't let that voice, that negative voice, like, I can't feed that, because when I go with the next shift, it's just going to make it worse. So for me, it was always just about I had to force myself to reset it, even if, you know, I didn't play that whole next period. Because I'm like, I know if I really sit there and feel like, did I want to feel, you know, shitty and down? Well, yeah. Like, you know, we just got benched because I turned it over or whatever, right? So it was always just about resetting it. And again, like using the past adversity of, you know, well, is it really that bad? I'm like, remember what you did in the burn unit? And remember how far you've come? Like, look where you are right now. You're in the NHL. You're playing an NHL game. I'm like, okay, yeah. Just kind of reset it. Have fun. Like, you're here. You're going to make mistakes, right? So it was just always bringing it back to that sort of place of being free, right?
Yeah, you want to offer your best action, right? And like, there's always going to be a stimulus. There's always going to be an event. And your relationship to that, there's a gap, you know, where you can respond.
Totally.
And, you know, I've tried to showcase it on this podcast a little bit, offering, you know, insight into, you know, breath work, visualization today. You know, like there's a quote that comes to mind. My trainer, Ian Mack, in the summer, there was a particular, he would take me to certain levels of exercise that, like, I mean, I always trained hard, but this was different. Like, this was next level. And, you know, I remember one particular day we were doing sled pushes, and like, I mean, it was a 9 or 9.5 out of 10 on the effort, you know, the, like sort of perceived effort scale. And I'm looking for the exit. Like, I'm in one. And we're on, like, you know, one of the last set, you know, I've got poison in my legs, like, you know, totally filling up with, you know, lactic acid and whatnot. Yeah. And he goes, all right, there's your entry fee. Like, like this, all everything to this point was just so that you could take the next step towards growth. And very much like physical growth, like, there's going to be some discomfort. Mentally, there's, once you recognize that you can be stronger and more resilient and more consistent, you have to look in the mirror. Like, you know, I've done it where, you know, wow, Connor, like, good job. Like, you handled that stress today of the game, coach yelled at you, turnover, lineup decision. Well, by definition, then that's in contrast to times that I did not. And if those are still tangible, rememberable, and fresh, then there's still room to go. It's going to hurt. Like, it's going to, you're mentally going to have to admit that, you know, my sense of belief maybe wasn't as strong as it was today. You know, it has wavered in the past. You know, but there's still opportunity ahead. Totally.
Well, and that's why I say, like, adversity is the biggest opportunity for growth, right? Just like exactly to your point. So I think you're bang on with all that stuff. And that's exactly what we, you know, what I try and teach with my clients is, like, it's not going to be a straight line. There's going to be these times, and it's like the mountain analogy. If you say to a guy, hey, you need to get to the other side of this mountain, and you know, he's in a wheelchair, and it's like, well, how am I going to do that? And it's like, I didn't say you had to go over the mountain. You can also go around the mountain, right? And it, like, again, you're just flipping that mindset of, like, this is going to suck, or this is going to be daunting. And, like, again, it's to your point with the workout, like, it's just flipping. It's really about the belief, right? Because when you go through that and it's like, man, I didn't even think that was possible. It's like, oh, you just gained an extra step. And then it's like, guess what? Next time, then your entry fee is going to, now you're going to be up here instead of where you were there. And it's just, again, it's that belief system mentally, like you said, and physically. So,
and I want to end with, you know, I know after your career, we talked about a little bit off the air, you know, you went through, you know, some difficult times and the ending, I mean, we put our heart and soul into our careers. It means a lot to us. We identify as hockey players for a long time. Yeah. It can be a tumultuous time, but, like, I'm a new dad, for example, and I have tough days at the rink, and I'm someone, I wear my heart on my sleeve. I take my work very personally, but I remember, like, my dad had some tough days at work. I know it. And he was always dad when he came home.
Yeah.
He was the best. Like, he'd always check his, you know, his work at the door. He's not as passionate about his work as I am. Like, I'm living my dream, you know?
Yeah.
And it really is something I've been able to leverage in other areas of my life. Once I've been able to see the success in the athletic arena, I've pictured like what would my dad come home like today after a bad day at the rink? What would a more patient husband, you know, I have a wife, like this is not limited to just sport. Like we can reverse engineer how we want to show up in other arenas of our life.
Absolutely.
With the same level of efficacy, and it might even be more important.
Yeah. Well, I think too, like specifically for like, you know, pro athlete too, of you're saying when you come home, and it's just, it's about just reframing everything. Like I said, like you might have, you know, or I might have like a shitty day at the rink, and it's just like, okay, but let's bring it back of, you know, is it that bad? And then, you know, you're playing pro hockey, you know, you have the bigger picture in mind, and you may have a bad day and you're like, no, that's not me. Like, you know, let's park it. Okay, here's what I learned. Let's move on to the next day. And then again, showing up for what's the bigger picture things like family and relationships. And, you know, again, anyone can have a business life and a personal life. And, you know, we can get into that and, you know, dive deep down to what the balance of that should be. You know, if you want to keep those things separate, then yeah, keep them separate. And like as a pro athlete, for example, you have the opportunity to spend time with, you know, your kids. That's something that, you know, I really cherished. Like when I retired, I had a kid like right away. And my son, and I'm like, you know, and I was going through, and it was a rough time when I retired. Like I was going, you know, you lose your identity. So you have this identity crisis and you're like, what am I going to do now for the rest of my life? And then shortly, like I was going through a divorce, like my dad was getting sick. And like, I had all this stuff going on that really like took a toll on me. But again, it's just, you know, trying to reframe that and live in the journey and being present, even though it's hard not to be. And again, like, so going back to like my kid, it's like, man, I wouldn't have this opportunity to spend every day with, you know, with my son otherwise. So just like really being thankful of like those small things where, and bringing it back, we're like, yeah, today might've sucked, but A, that's not me. It's just part of this big journey I'm living. And like right now I get to go like play with my kid for 2 hours. Like life's pretty good, right? Where if you start reframing it like that, it really, you know, can reset everything for the next day, right?
Yeah. No, I appreciate that. I do want to end with, because I want to be respectful of your time. Hard fought years in the NHL, maybe not supposed to be there. All of a sudden you're there. Like looking back, what are you most proud of about your NHL career?
I just think it was, you know, showing up every day and relishing that role. I mean, it's not an easy role to play. It's funny, like my first couple of years, I liked the role. I shouldn't say I didn't like it later, but like we chatted before, like it can take a toll on you after a while. And you know, for me, I wasn't a huge guy. So it's like, yeah, do I want to get punched in the face by someone that weighs 240 pounds and it's got 4 inches on me? Like, not really, but you know, in my early days, like, yeah, bring it on. But then, you know, after a while you're like, my face is sore, my hands are sore. You know, I don't want to get knocked out in front of 20,000 people. Again, you start thinking of like the negative stuff can kind of creep in. So again, I just, you know, I pride myself on, you know, playing that role and, you know, and really relishing it and kind of conquering those, I would say conquering, but just, you know, being okay with, you know, those demons are present and just not giving them life and really just taking pride in that. That was a big thing.
No, that's awesome. Patty, thanks for your time, man. It was good to catch up. It's good to see what you're doing. I'm rooting for you, yeah, and I appreciate the hour together.
Yeah, man. Good catching up. We'll chat soon. Good luck the rest of the way.
Thanks, brother. Be well.
Okay, man. You too.